Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2020 third quarter results conference call and webcast. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique et à la web diffusion des résultats du troisième trimestre 2020 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Senior Director, Communications. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. A presentation supporting today's discussion is available as we speak on the homepage of our website at www.innergex.com. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectations and assumptions on which forward-looking statements are based are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as at the date of this call, and the corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the MD&A for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Jean-François Neault, Chief Financial Officer, who will present Q3 results, and Mr. Michel Letellier, President and Chief Executive Officer, who will review our operational highlights. I now turn the conference over to Mr. Neault.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning, everyone. Our third quarter results posted growth over the same period last year, mainly due to the commissioning of the Phoebe Solar project and the Foard City Wind project last year, and to the contribution of the Salvador and Montaner acquisitions completed in May and July this year. Production and revenues in the quarter were up 21% and 14% respectively compared to the same period last year. Adjusted EBITDA was up 1%, while revenues proportionate and adjusted EBITDA proportionate were up by 14% and 6% respectively. Before going further, I would like to stress that the comparable period in 2019 is still reported on a continued operation basis, which excludes HS Orca results. Production for the three-month period ended September 30th, 2020, was 21% higher, due mainly to the factors mentioned previously and to higher production from the Quebec hydro facilities and the hydro facilities in BC that were not affected by the curtailment. These items were partly offset by the curtailment imposed in BC Hydro for five hydro facilities. On page nine, revenues were up 14%, mainly explained by higher revenue from the Quebec hydro facilities, the contribution of Foard City and Phoebe, and the acquisition of Montaner and Salvador. These items were partly offset by lower revenues from France and the facilities in BC due to a combination of BC Hydro curtailment and lower average selling price. On the next page, adjusted EBITDA increased by 1% due to the contribution of the recent acquisition in wind and the commissioning of Phoebe and Ford City, as well as to higher contribution from the Quebec Wind and Hydro facilities due to higher revenues. These items were partly offset by a lower contribution from the hydro facilities in BC and lower contribution from the wind facilities in France due to lower revenues and higher operational expenses. The 6% increase in adjusted EBITDA proportionate is mainly due to the PTCs generated by the Ford City wind farm following its commissioning, higher revenues and lower operating costs at the Shannon and Flattop facilities, and higher revenue at the Doki and Toba Montrose facilities. These items were partly offset by a lower contribution from the facilities in Chile and the Jimmy Creek facility due to lower revenue, partly caused by the curtailment in BC Hydro. Continuing on page 12, the $42 million increase in long-term debt is mainly due to the $171 million Hillcrest construction loan and tax equity bridge loan, the $172 million long-term loan facilities assumed in the Montanair acquisition, and the strengthening of the U.S. and Euro against the Canadian dollar. These items were partly offset by the net repayment of $238 million of the corporate credit facilities from the proceeds of the investment made by Hydro-Québec, and scheduled principal repayment on long-term debt, as well as tax attribute allocation. On the next page, changes in the total assets stem mainly from the increase in property, plant, and equipment due to Hillcrest and the Salvador and Montanair acquisition, the increase in investment tax credit recoverable relating to Hillcrest, the increase from the construction activities related to the Griffin Trail wind project, and the strengthening of the U.S. and Euro against the Canadian dollars. Change in total liabilities stem mostly from the increase in long-term debt. The change in shareholder equity is explained by the private placement of 34.6 million shares from Hydro-Québec and an increase in non-controlling interest stemming from the Montanair acquisition. These items were partly offset by dividend declared on common and preferred share. As shown on the next slide, the free cash flow has decreased by $5 million on a trailing 12-month basis. The unfavorable variance in free cash flow is mainly due to the commencement of the repayment period on certain project financing, which were not in full effect in the comparative period, an unfavorable impact of the adjusted EBITDA proportionate stemming from the BC Hydro imposed curtailment during 2020, a decrease in free cash flow attributable to discontinued operation, including the recovery of maintenance capex expenditures following the sale of HS2CA in the second quarter of 2019, and lower generation due to unfavorable weather conditions. These items were partly offset by the timing of certain project loan interest payments, which resulted in the corporation having made five quarterly payments during the comparative period, and the free cash flow contribution of the recently acquired commission project and lower interest payment from the corporate revolving facilities concurrent with the Hydro-Québec private placement. Energec does not consider the $96 million to represent the current cash-generating capacity of its operation. When normalizing its free cash flow with the non-recurring curtailment imposed by BC Hydro, the increase in the quarterly dividend following the Hydro-Québec private placement, offset by the decrease in corporate revolving interest payment following the Hydro-Québec placement, we would have reached a free cash flow of around $100 million. For the trailing 12-month ended September 30, 2020, the payout ratio amounted to 124% of free cash flow, compared with 93% for the corresponding period last year. When normalizing with the item mentioned before, the corporation estimates its payout ratio to be closer to 100%. On a forward-looking basis, we are confident to remain around or a little above 100% over the next 12-month period. Finally, on next page, we are proud to announce that we have closed a $93 million construction and long-term credit agreement for the Innavik hydroelectric project. The construction term loan bear interest at 3.95%. Following completion of construction, the remaining balance of the aforementioned loan will be converted into a long-term loan bearing the same fixed interest rate and maturing 4 years after the facility reach COD, which is scheduled in December 2022. On that note, I will give the floor to Michel for the operational review of the past.
Well, thank you, Jean-François, and welcome, everybody. First and foremost, I'd like to make a good thank you to all our employees and also our business partner that have helped us through their dedication and adaptability during this pandemic to keep our plant operating and our construction and pipeline of development going. We've been innovative in our approach, and also we have been successful to keep our working space being safe. So thank you to all, and tip my hat to all our leadership team to have been able to keep this business going the way we have in this challenging time, and our thought also goes to others that are a little bit more unfortunate in their businesses. So on that aspect, we also have, given the fact that we have seen the second wave being strong, listened to the government guidelines, and we have kept our working from home policy until next spring, and we'll monitor, of course, the evolution of the pandemic. Glad to see that the vaccine evolution are going well, but of course, we have to be patient while this vaccine will be distributed, and hence our safety comes first. So we will be on the forefront of the new policy or government policy. So thank you all for being so dedicated, and I'm very proud of all the team and see how we have been able to advance. We, in the same thought, we have been also to be active in our construction, our line of development. I'll talk about it, but we also have been able to close on acquisition. Glad to report that we have done two so far this year. Remember, Salvador in Chile, and most recently, Montaner Wind Farm in Idaho, USA. Those two transactions are the type of M&A that Innogex is aiming at. As we said in the past, I think that M&A will be a great tool for us to rebalance our portfolio of activities and plan to basically rebalance the cash on cash. That you know that we have our payout ratio that is a little bit of a challenge. We want to make sure that this payout ratio becomes less comfortable. We have said that we're looking to have a payout ratio below 100%. And we want to continue developing also. So M&A will be a good tool to rebalance the equilibrium between our own development greenfield project, especially the one that have tax equity, as you know, a little bit more cash on cash towards the little bit longer term. So if we can find M&A to rebalance this cash on cash in the early years, this is our strategy, and I think that we have started to deploy it, and we are still focused on doing this. So I think that on the long run, we'll have a better approach on our cash on crash and development of projects. So pretty happy on this, and the team, the M&A team, is focused to find other transactions in that type. In terms of construction, we've been pretty busy also this year. As you know, we are working in Hillcrest, getting very close to the closing. Very happy to report also that we have made the first funding on tax equity. For people that knows tax equity, this is not an easy task. Thorough in their approach, and the team has been able to answer all the questions from the different stakeholder in this approach. So pretty happy on that aspect. So it's behind us, and we are continuing putting a section of our power plant in service. We have eight blocks that we have to complete. So far one is done, meaning interconnected and fully operational. And roughly we'll have one every 2 weeks or so. So theoretically, we should be very close to have six or seven blocks by the end of the year, and the remaining at the beginning of 2021. So we will be selling electricity in the next couple of weeks, and it will be a gradual COD in phase as we interconnect those blocks. Inavik project is going very well. As you know, we have been able to go back this year, even if the COVID was in place, and happy to report that everything has been going very well on Inavik. And as Jean-François has mentioned, we have now finalized the construction financing and long-term financing. You will see in the future that this financing is a little bit different. It's something that we'll be looking into somehow of a reverse mortgage for the first 5-6 years. The ability of the project to support the debt is really high, so we were able to restructure a little bit this financing, and hence this will generate or free almost 100% of the EBITDA to be distributed to partner in the first 5 to 6 years. So this is fairly innovative financing that we're putting in place as well to promote the availability of cash on cash for the partners. The Yon project in France, that's the extension of an existing park. As we know, it's not a big project, but as I said before, this is the first project from the team in France, from greenfield to construction. So hopefully it's not the last. As you know, we have a very aggressive development in France for our pipeline. I'll talk about it just a little later. So we are still counting on a COD by the first Q1 of 2021. Although we might be surprised to see, but depending on the pandemic and the restriction in France, that's why we're cautious and call it for the first quarter of 2021. Sorry. Griffin Trail project has been going very well. This project, as you know, has been developed very, very, very fast. And we have been able to secure the EPC contractor and the GE supply for the wind turbines. This is the same team that has done Ford City, and they work very well together. Blattner is a very professional contractor in the U.S. They have a lot of experience in building wind farm. So far, we're very pleased on how they're approaching the project, and very confident to have this plan being in commission by the third quarter of 2021. Also, we have been able to secure the interconnection to be before the blackout period in the ERCOT. So as the wind farm will be erected, we will be able to sell electricity to the market as early as June, probably. So that covers the construction. Now, the development activities have been also quite active. Even though we are facing this pandemic, our team has found ways to make public meeting, virtual public meeting, and being very creative in their approach to engage with all the government agency in order to advance our permitting. So very happy to report that things are going well in Hawaii. We have been also been able to sign two PPA. And this, as you know, is a vector of growth that we think Innergex will be successful in. Producing renewable energy, matching it with batteries, is definitely a sector of our industry that will see a big growth in the future. So these projects are a very good example, and it provides us with a lot of experience on how to deal with the utility and how do we are integrating batteries in the these utility. That being said, we are also counting on our joint venture with Hydro-Québec to further develop this sector, given the fact that Hydro-Québec has a lot of experience and good people in order to help us understand the need of utility and hence being able to deploy this strategy going forward. In terms of general development, as you know, we are putting a lot of effort in the U.S. I can have a word regarding the U.S. election, not that I want to get into politics at all, but given the primary result, we think that the Democrat or Joe Biden will be, well, don't want to do politics, but it seems that we will have a Democrat president in the United States. So therefore, we are pleased, given the fact that their program are very pro-renewable energy. And therefore, we think that our strategy to get into the U.S. was a good one. Even though we have had some success with the prior administration, we think that Mr. Biden has, I would say, more views on putting a growth in renewable energy in the United States. So therefore, we are glad to have our team on the ground and our policy, not policy, but our strategy to grow solar project in the States. Remember that we have a target of around 600 megawatt by 2023 is on track. We want to diversify also outside ERCOT, so we're very present in PGM and in the Northwest as well, in the United States, in order to deploy the panel that we have secured. Remember that we have a little bit over 100 megawatt of solar panels that are grandfathered for a full ITC grant. So this is going very well. We're still on track to have that target by 2023. France, as I mentioned early on, is doing good in the sense that our pipeline is growing. Now it's over 350 megawatt. Of course, these pipelines are staggered in their maturity of development. But the idea there is to have one or two projects by 2021 or 2022 to be able to put forward for future RFP. As you know, France has announced very aggressive future RFP for wind and solar in the coming years. So we want to make sure that we have a pipeline that can match these future RFP. And we have grown also the team of development in France so that our people can come up with new projects for the future. The Chilean market is also very interesting in the sense that even though we're seeing a slowdown in the demand in Chile because of the COVID, Chile has been hurt pretty bad with the COVID. But one of the strengths of the economy of Chile is the ability to export raw material and mainly copper. And if you have seen the price of copper lately, given the fact that China seems to be doing very well in terms of recovery, the copper pricing has been going up, and it's one of, well, I would say, getting to range where it's very profitable to produce copper in South America. So we're seeing a lot of activities over there in the mining that are promising. And one thing that is very interesting in Chile, the lower house of the government in Chile has voted to have a regulation to cancel any coal plant by 2025. Mind you that that law has to go through Senate, which might have been, which might be tampered a little bit, but the movement to cancel coal in Chile is growing. And remember that Chile has about 30% of its energy coming from coal. So we think that we will see some opportunity in Chile in the next few years in order to replace the coal that will be shut down. So on that note, I would open up the question period.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any key. Your first question comes from Nelson NG of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks, and good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My first question relates to Griffin Trail. Can you just talk about the, like, how should we think about the project cost to EBITDA multiple and the expected returns for that project?
Yeah. As you know, Griffin Trail, for the time being, has been developed as a merchant plant. That doesn't mean that we would not be looking to have a long-term contract with the potential off-taker if the price makes sense. On that aspect, we have now a small team, but a team of specialists in trading and marketing energy in the USA. So I think it will be a better equipped also to reach out for a customer on that basis, but that that might come in the future. We're still, I would say, positive about the future market in ERCOT. One thing I was happily surprised to see is the price of natural gas that is coming up in the United States, even though we are in the shoulder season. We've seen natural gas coming from their bottom of, maybe $1.50, $1.60 per gigajoule to now close to $3, and it last week it went up to $3.50 or $3.40. So this is giving a little bit of a hope also on the minimal cost to produce electricity in a merchant plant scheme in the USA. I think that one of the aspects of the pandemic has to some degree slowed down the fracking for oil. And as you know, natural gas is sometimes a byproduct of that activities. And we have seen less activities, of course, for fracking for oil, so potentially less really cheap natural gas being deployed in the marketplace. So that give us a little bit of a relief. But I would say that our long-term forecast, we are looking at some curves that are not taking into account carbon pricing. And so therefore, something around in the $20 range is probably conservative. Mind you that we have also the PTC. So if you take the PTC at $25 indexed, plus something around in the range of $20 on average, you still have a decent total revenue for that type of a project, Nelson. So as far as the total return of the project, it will definitely depend on the evolution of that curve. But we're hoping to do this type of project, we're aiming to the high single digit and possibly double digit, depending on how fast the curve will evolve. And if Biden's gets in and put some more pressure on pricing for carbon, then these type of project may see some benefit from those policy. Mr. Biden said that they will rejoin the Paris Accord. So in order to follow through this, somehow, somewhere, a price on carbon will have to be established in the USA, and these type of projects will benefit from it.
Okay, thanks for that. So you mentioned that it looks like your EBITDA assumption or your underlying assumption for your EBITDA forecast for Griffin Trail is about $20. Like, if you were to contract or enter into a hedge for that project, where is the market price today? I presume it's a little bit below 20, like similar to Ford.
Yeah, it's a little bit below. It's anywhere between 13 to 18. You know, it depends. It depends on the location. Depends on the expectation of the market, but that's why we said that we better take a chance to be merchant. That aspect is a little bit unusual for us, and I'm not saying that we'll do this for every project, but given the disconnect between PPA and merchant pricing, I think that it's a good bet to stay floating for the time being and see how things are going to be. But like I said, with Biden coming in as a president, as a new leadership, I think we'll see a little bit potential on carbon pricing, and therefore we think we're a little bit more optimistic these days than 6 months ago on that aspect.
Okay, got it.
And Nelson, just to clarify also, if you're trying to make an EBITDA multiple on that project, Griffin Trail, I remind you to use our proportionate figure, which includes the PTCs. That is very important. I want to remind you that PTC serves to pay down the tax equity investment. So in fairness, in order to have a proper multiple on that project, you need to add back the PTC value, which is around 28 million Canadian dollars to the 9 million.
Yeah, because we now, as you know, Jean-François, maybe you can explain what's a little bit better for our crowd, is that we do now book that as a debt. The tax equity is a almost a project debt for us. So with the PTC revenue, we are offsetting that liability in our balance sheet. So it's definitely, we see that as a total revenue, PTC plus the revenue on the market, and those revenue help decrease the tax equity over time.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then just moving over to France, it looks like the temporary shutdowns at two facilities continued on from Q2. Can you give some color as to what those shutdowns relate to, and will they carry on into Q4?
Well, we had two events of a wind, a blade failure, and those two blades happened on one wind facility, but we have the same technology with the wind park just beside it. And the agency in France, being very, I would say, conservative, have asked us to shut down both plant until we could see a long-term plan or a long-term solution provided by Vestas. Now, we have had the possibility to restart those wind farms with some curtailment process, meaning that we wanted to go progressively. That was the plan accepted by the France government agencies. But so far, it has been proven that the new strategy has worked. And since mid-August or so, the plant now are free to operate, except in a couple of special occasion where wind and speed and direction would happen. But this is temporary because theoretically we are going to implement a upgrades or repair in the blades to reinforce them. So it shouldn't be that way for the long term until we have the upgrade on the blades. Perhaps until probably next year, but the lost revenue will be fairly low, considering that it's only a few occasions where we will have to apply this curtailment.
All right, thanks for the color. I will leave it there and give others to ask questions. Give others a chance to ask questions. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from David Quezada of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. My first question here, just on your solar business and development goals in the U.S., I'm wondering how, with the new government coming in, how could changes or reduction on the solar panel tariffs affect that business, and do you see potential for a change or extension or modification of the tax credit, and is that something that you're starting to plan for?
It's difficult to know because we'll know by mid-January if the Senate has gone into a majority of Democrats. But in general, PTC and ITC has been supported by both parties. As you remember, the PTC were to be decreased by 2020 and ITC by 2022. So I think that the new administration might revisit that, might make some extension on those. We don't know. That's one possibility. In terms of duty on solar panel coming from China, we'll see how Biden's strategy will be. If they get relief on those, it's only good for the industry in the sense that if it lowers the price of those panels, our industry will benefit from it. So that might be positive. But on the other end, the market in the U.S. had somehow adapted to those duty, and either way, we're comfortable with it. We did bought some panel, of course, but it's only 115, 120 megawatt worth of panel that would secure roughly 600 megawatt worth of project if we apply a certain ratio. So if we get to have some benefit in seeing some panel being reduced, we'll benefit from the balance of those 600 megawatt panel supply. So either way, we would be happy with the solution. But I think that the Biden administration will put more pressure on carbon pricing, which ultimately could help also seeing some green credit revenue on those type of projects.
Great. Thank you for that. And then maybe just one more in the U.S. I understand that New York, the state of New York, has signaled an increased openness to renewable energy imports. I'm curious if you have any development stage projects in Quebec that can maybe move forward to satisfy that potential demand, or if you can maybe get involved in some kind of a project with Hydro-Quebec, if that were to, you know, be a possibility.
Sure. That's one possibility. We do, as other developer, we do have some project in Quebec that could be useful to export. And we also have some project in New Brunswick, some greenfield project in New Brunswick that we could theoretically build for export as well. So this is definitely something that we are looking into. And Hydro-Quebec has in the past been open to make some kind of a, I wouldn't say joint venture, but provide the wind project with the support of Big Hydro in order to be firm energy being sold in the U.S. That's also something that we could undertake as well. But all that is good news, actually. The more energy we could export from Quebec to U.S. would free up some room in Quebec for future development.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Sean Stewart of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Question on the Frontera project. I know it's been under review for some time now. Any update you can give on advancing that project? I see you've taken it off the schedule. Any update on Frontera specifically?
That's a good question. Working on one strategy to have Frontera being secured in terms of permitting deadline, we are advanced to a point where, by definition, this project could have been seen or could be seen by government agency to be already under construction, and hence would not be subject to time frame for the duration of all the permits. So this is it's one way that local management are working on, and if successful, that takes a little bit off the pressure for us to start to continue the construction, because theoretically the construction could have been defined as a start. So that gives us a little bit more time to negotiate financing and to look for an off-taker, and some discussion have been initiated to find potentially an off-taker slash partner in the project to develop it. And in the meantime, we, as you might have remembered, we have another project a few kilometers upstream called San Carlos. And San Carlos was a project on Yaima, and some water rights was also owned by Colbún, a local utility. And we bought those water rights. So now San Carlos could basically merge these two water rights and have a project in around 150 megawatt that have more pounding capacity. So storage would be around 5 to 6 hours. And this project is a little bit more cost efficient than Frontera. And so looking into those two as a potential, I would say, portfolio to attract local partner slash off-taker in this project. So it's not done, far from it, but it seems that those two together are a better economic proposal than Frontera by itself.
Thanks for that detail. Second question, the two 25-year PPAs you signed in Hawaii recently, can you give us some idea of what those terms might look like?
What do you mean, the price or the – as you remember, those PPA in Hawaii are more of a, I would say, a capacity payment. We are translating it into a price per megawatt, but ultimately what we get is an annual payment, well, a monthly payment for availability of the total installation. But the pricing, have we published the pricing, or ECO has, right? ECO has.
I don't.
Made the pricing. So there's one that is a little bit below 10 cents, the equivalent of megawatt per hour, and the other one is a little bit higher than 10 cents. So a little bit all overall, I would say if you want to make to comment, given the fact that Hawaii is quite costly to build, these are fairly competitive pricing when you consider the size of those projects, and this is giving me a lot of confidence that these type of project can be done on the main island or in the United States or in Chile and become very competitive down the road as we see battery also price being reduced in the next few years. So all in all, I think that these projects are interesting in the size, but they're not big. But what we like is that we get to have a 25 years PPA, and that give us the chance to work this new field and to understand also the interaction with the need of the utility on how to manage the solar, how to manage the battery, and how it works together. So that's roughly it. It's a little bit below 10 and a little bit higher than 10.
Okay, but think of it like a capacity payment structure.
Yeah, it's more. Yeah,
well, it's an implied calculation.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, that's all I had. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Rupert Mera of National Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rupert.
Tell me, how are you thinking about the dividend and the payout ratio right now? You mentioned it could be close to 100% for the next 12 months. Is that with a typical dividend increase? And then looking at your longer-term forecasts, how long before you can bring that down to a more comfortable level given your pace of development?
Yeah, well, I will not comment on the dividend increase for next year. That's a board prerogative. But definitely, like what I said, Rupert, at the beginning, we want to grow. And of course, there's a lot of activities going on, and whenever we invest in a greenfield project with the construction and then permitting period, and depending on the type of project we get, they're not necessarily cash friendly in the sense that cash on cash on those greenfield projects are a little bit back-ended. Not necessarily really bad in the sense that when they are in operation, but when you develop them, you have to build them, so you are putting a little bit of capital up front, of course, and it takes at least 2 to 3 years before you get to have some capital back. So our strategy of mixing M&A with our own development is going to help, and depending on how we have success, and I think we've shown that our M&A team is very capable by by the two acquisitions we did last year, Salvador and
Montaner,
thank you. We think that we can do that every year at least, you know, one or two type of transaction like that. If we're successful in this, our payout ratio will be declining pretty fast. And as the project, the Greenfield project that we're developing, are getting in COD, so we're confident in the next two, 3 years, we'll manage our payout ratio in a range where we will be a little bit more comfortable. And we will continue that strategy because I think that both works pretty well. And we don't want to reduce the development expenses. We have seen some very good advancement in our portfolio of Greenfield project. There's tremendous opportunity in France and also in the U.S. And therefore, we think we're creating long-term value. But given the fact that we have been committed to pay our dividend and increasing it in the past, we want to make sure that we have the cash profile to do so. And I think our strategy is sound, and we have the means to deploy it.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then looking at the cash profile of some of those projects, you mentioned the cash is typically back-end loaded in these U.S. projects. And you've talked about a couple of potential stimulus mechanisms in the U.S. market, carbon credits and tax equity. Can you talk to me about which you would prefer and maybe which one the wind industry would prefer, if the wind industry is lobbying one way or another? It would seem to me that maybe carbon credits would offer more revenue streams for your existing assets, maybe provide a better terminal value. How are you thinking about the U.S. market and stimulus?
It's a complex question, Rupert. Do we like the tax equity? Do we like the PTC? Yes. Is it complicated? Very, very, very complicated. So if there is a system where we would not have to rely on tax equity provider, i.e., if there's a carbon credit, a federal carbon credit, a little bit like what we had in the past here in Canada, the Eco Energy, if you remember, Rupert,
yeah.
That would be freeing the structure of tax equity, and it would make lawyers probably sad because lawyers and bankers are making a lot of money with the tax equity these days. But yeah, if there's a transparent and long-term commitment on having some kind of a carbon incentive paying directly to the project, that would be probably the best. One other aspect that the wind industry is lobbying is the cash grant. We've seen that in the past. It's a system where the PTC looks more like the ITC at the end of the day because it's a direct cash grant given to the project instead of going through a tax equity provider that could deduct this tax deduction on its own income tax payment. So that would also be a little bit more flexible and friendly to the developer. But we can live, and we have learned to live with the PTC and the ITC as we know them right now. Like I said, a lot of work, a lot of fees around these structure. But on the other end, this is very friendly to our industry. We're getting to have 2.5 cents U.S. indexed on these projects. So, you know, it's more than half of the total revenue needed to develop a project in the United States. So one has to be happy also to have that. Although it's complicated, I think it's very, very positive for the industry at the end of the day.
Well, thanks for the color. I'll leave it there.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Mark Jarvi of CIBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. First question, just on the debt side of things. I'm just wondering if there's any opportunity to refinance or repay any higher interest rate debt out there, maybe use surplus cash or capacity in a credit facility to ease some of that interest expense?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Jean-François has mentioned it last time. We have one easy target, which is we call it the AMP loan.
Yeah.
We had postponed this reimbursement given the COVID crisis last spring. It was planned to be repaid out of the proceeds of Hydro-Québec, but given the opportunity to start Griffin Trail and just wanted to be a little bit more conservative depending on how the pandemic would have evolved, we had postponed this repayment, but for 2021, it's definitely a target. Easy. That's an easy, I would say, fruit to pick, and always looking into how we can refinance some of our assets. But there's not a ton of opportunity there.
The next one could be Montanair.
Yes,
that we could look at, but we're not at this stage for now.
And remember that we still have, we have now 16 or 17 asset, unencumbered asset in our basket. So given the fact that we have also been renewing PPA with some of these assets, especially in Quebec, Hydro in Quebec, and so we might see some opportunity there with potentially a green bond as well. To replace some of our corporate facility. So we're looking into those, and given the fact that the market seems to be hungry also for these type of product, we might be opportunistic down the road to look into those.
Okay. And then my second question is just around renewable energy credits, and just wondering, you know, when you see a project like Hillcrest, just your sort of view again on where REC pricing could go, and you know, as you think about more solar projects, either PJM or ERCOT, how much do you guys assume that there's upward pressure on REC pricing? And can you remind us again whether or not you guys keep all that benefit, or if you share any with your offtaker?
In the case of Hillcrest, we were sharing it with our offtaker. In Griffin Trail, and I don't want to have Ford. I can't remember exactly how we share it with Ford, but Griffin Trail, of course, we have 100% of it. And in the future development that we're doing in solar market in the U.S., like I said, we'll see how Biden new policy will drive those markets, but I think they'll be under pressure, these markets, if U.S. joined the Paris Accord, the Paris Accord, how you, l'accord de Paris, in French it says, it's a little bit easier for me, we'll see some pressure on those prices for sure.
And you know, regional differences in pricing is, you know, does happen in the U.S. market. Does that inform your views of where you want to do more solar in the U.S. market with giving that optionality, or do you just, you know, rather go in with just better initial contract terms?
Well, if we have the opportunity, and I don't want to disclose, but we have been successful now to negotiate a PPA, a term sheet for a PPA for a little bit over 100 megawatt in the States. It's conditional, of course, of all the permitting, and it's in a, you know, a very early stage. But I think that we'll see also that will come with the same thing. If there's a pressure on renewable credits, there will also be pressure on off-taker to secure long-term PPA that could include those. And I think that we've seen a lot of pressure on pricing over the on the downside over the last few years in the state for PPA and off-taker. But somehow I think that trend might change a little bit. And, of course, in big market like ERCOT, where probably easier to develop projects, that might not be the case, or the pressure on the upper side might be a little bit lower. But in place like PGM, Ohio, Illinois, and stuff like that, where it's not that easy to develop project, and so we think that the available project might not be that plenty, considering the potential need for off-taker to secure long-term PPA. So I think I'm starting to be more positive about the pricing, especially on solar in the United States going forward.
Okay, that's great detail. Thank you, Michel. That's all the questions I had.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Ben Fan of BMO. Please go ahead.
Hello, Ben.
Thanks. Hey, good morning. I wanted to touch base on some of the scope reshaping of the Innovec debt. And I'm wondering, I know you pay down debt each year on your hydro assets, but you look at the trends we're seeing with your lenders, you getting the sense that maybe you can reshape a lot of the debt in the years ahead, that you can keep leverage on a bit more than what you expected in the past?
That's a very good that's a good question, Ben. It'd be difficult to do it on project finance specifically, but if we look at our total corporate exposure, that strategy could be applied, Ben, because in a sense, especially with our hydro portfolio, if we are repaying debt on a much faster pace than the life of the asset,
or the life of the PPA,
one could think that there's some room to restructure some kind of a corporate loan, but it's too early to be firm on this, but we will definitely be looking into this. And same goes with the tax equity structure, as we mentioned. Our tax equity is treated like a project debt in our books, and they're forecasted to be fully repaid in 10 years or so. And some of our assets will be lasting for 25, 30 years, 35 years perhaps in solar. So there's definitely some room there where at the end of the year 10, or theoretically on a forecast basis, on year 10 you don't have any debt anymore. So there's potentially opportunities to restructure some kind of a total leverage at the corporate level that represent a more regular type of refinancing or financing.
Okay. I was wondering also the site C project, probably a low probability of it being canceled. There's some musings about it in the press. Can you comment on if, let's just say, it does get canceled, does BC need more power, and does your prospective portfolio position you for that?
Well, that's a shame to see what's happening in Site C. The independent industry were cautious when the decision was put forward and had an alternative proposal from small hydro to wind farm to biomass. That could have been probably a lot more competitive than what we know now about Site C. Now, difficult to understand what will be the decision of both the government and BC Hydro, but my understanding of the geotech challenge over there is not an easy task, and it will cost money. So we'll see how they will deal with it, but if ever they decide to cancel it, I think that this will be a good opportunity for IPP to come back and fill the gap. Now, what I'm a little bit disappointed in BC is the lack of determination to switch from fuel using fuel to heat the houses in BC towards going and electrified BC houses. We have seen some willingness from the federal to help, but we have yet to see how BC Hydro will embrace those proposals. There's a tremendous opportunity to have more electricity being sold to individuals in BC if they replace natural gas for heating. Same goes with the rest of Canada and Ontario. Quebec has done that in the past successfully, and there's only a few percentage of the houses in Quebec that have been heated by natural gas. So I think in a way for Canada to meet their future target, this is a very easy target, is to switch from natural gas and put more heat pump in the system. And the federal government has been positive about these programs. And I think, frankly, this is an easy solution for Canada.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from Naji Baydoun of Industrial Alliance Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Just wanted to go back to a comment you made earlier about renewing PPAs in Quebec. I think you have about 100 megawatts total of hydro between Quebec and Chile that are going to be coming off their PPAs by next year. Have you renewed the PPAs in Quebec? And for the Chile facilities, are you comfortable running those on a merchant basis going forward?
Yeah, that's a good point. In Quebec, we have renewed the Chaudière, Saint-Paulin, Windsor. We have yet to renew Portneuf and SM1. So those are, Portneuf is only 26 megawatt, and SM1, the initial one is 7 megawatt. So it's not a huge exposure there. In Chile, we have, when we bought Duqueco, there were some existing PPA in place, and they are going to end by 2022. But we are actively renegotiating PPA. There's an active market in Chile. Right now, the market for 5 to 7 years PPA range anywhere between $43 to $47 per megawatt hour. And the big question in Chile, as I mentioned, is when are the coal plant will be shut down. Right now, like I said, the lower chamber has proposed a law to shut them down by 2025. I think it's a little bit aggressive because Chile would have to turn around very quickly to change their portfolio of how to produce the electricity. So I think that the customers are getting a little bit more nervous past 2025, 2026. So pricing that we're seeing up to 2025, 26 are in the range of mid-40-ish U.S., fully indexed. And also, there's another component in Chile that we forget, but the Chilean operator of the system is providing capacity payment also. So Duqueco is benefiting from capacity payment in the range of 15 to 20% of its total revenue. So it's, even though you could be merchant in Chile, you can have a certain portion of your total revenue that are based on capacity payment from government agencies. But like I said, we're aggressively looking for renewing PPA, and we do sign PPA. Those are sometimes smaller PPA, 50 gigawatt, 25 gigawatt, but they're adding up. And the right now, up to 2024-5, we're fully booked at 80-ish percent PPA and still looking to top debt.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Just one last question for me on Chile. I guess your development pipeline today in the country is more hydro-heavy. What's your strategy to sourcing more maybe wind or solar prospects to develop some maybe on-site projects for industrial customers?
Yeah, in Chile there's a lot of solar projects that have been developed or advanced to certain stages. So there's an active market there for M&A on very early stage project that we want to participate. And it's just a matter of matching the price of those versus developing our own. So the team over there is looking into this. We have in the last year or so been active in looking into existing facilities that were caught between unfortunately the price that went down and their banking facility. So there's an active M&A activities over there that is generated by banks that have repossessed or in the midst of repossessing some asset. So this is an active market and a quicker access to solar, and that's what we've done in the case of Salvador. But we're active in bidding in some other facility, and I think we'll be successful in a few of those. But same with wind. We have a small portfolio of wind data site that we are we also advance. But the M&A market is very, very active in Chile because a lot of projects were financed when the price of electricity was in a range of $80-$90 per megawatt hour. And now with the range of 45-ish, of course, the economics are not favorable for these old projects, or not that old project, the project that are 5-6 years old are suffering right now. And I think there's a great opportunity for us to get there.
That's a great detail. Thank you, Michel.
Sure.
Mrs. Vachon, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for joining us today. We'll talk to you at our next conference call in February.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect your line.